Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Easter Sunday to everyone who's tuning in to Project Peace's Blog Talk Radio Hour. Today is Sunday, April 12th. I would like to introduce myself, Paul Von Hartmann. I'm a cannabis scholar and photographer and biodynamic gardener. And I'd like to start today's broadcast just by dedicating it to someone who has made a huge difference in my life throughout the years, over 40 or 50 years that I've been listening to his music. John Prine passed away last week. And I would just like to dedicate today's broadcast to his memory and his spirit, and to say that without Mr. Prine's music in my life, I would have had a much less resilient spirit, I think. His music was part of my adolescence, and has stayed with me throughout the years. I know most of the songs, most of the words to most of his songs. And he's just really become a part of me. And I am really saddened by his passing, and mostly because he passed presumably alone in the context of the COVID virus, and the way people are passing on nowadays is really tragic. And I just felt a need to just say, you know, I just trust that he is having his reunion with all of his family members, and toasting with a vodka and ginger ale, sucking on a cigarette that's 9 miles long. And I just commend his spirit to the universe. And I don't really know how all of that works. I founded the California Cannabis Ministry in the individual, non-knowing, secular way that I have evolved as a human being. And part of that is thanks to John Prine and his take on spirituality that he expressed through his music. So I would like to just read from a song that he sang. He didn't write it, but I think it sort of sums up where we are at this point in time. And the name of the song is "That's How Every Empire Falls." And this is the last verse of it. "A bitter wind blows through the country. A hard rain falls on the sea. Comes without a warning. There must be something we don't see. What fire begets this fire? Like torches thrown into the straw. If no one asks, then no one answers. And that's how every empire falls." Thanks to John Prine for singing it. Thanks to R.B. Morris for writing it. And thank you all for tuning in today to see what this is all about. And I'll begin, as I usually do, by reading the lead-in to the program that I have posted online at Blog Talk Radio. The title is "Cannabis Processing, Stems and Seeds That We All Need." Cannabis is the only crop that produces complete nutrition and sustainable biofuels from the same harvest. At the same time, atmospheric carbon is sequestered, oxygen is produced, and aerosol terpenes are emitted, blocking increasing solar UVB radiation. Planting organic, non-GMO cannabis for food and biofuels requires infrastructure investment before the hemp seed hits the soil. Being ready to process enormous quantities of stem material in the fall to produce biofuels creates thousands of jobs immediately in farming, construction, manufacturing, and other Gaia therapeutic industries supplied by cannabis agriculture on the enormous scale needed to heal Earth's atmosphere, expand the arable base, and redistribute the true natural wealth of the world. Eliminating THC limits on cannabis agriculture is the first step necessary before spring planting season 2020 for initiating transition from fossil fuels and nuclear energy to earth-healing Gaia therapeutic agricultural and energy production. There's a lot that's said in there, and I'd like to just sort of simplify it. If you want to live past the next 20 or 30 years, if you want your children and grandchildren to enjoy a livable future, then we need to drill down into why we need to grow cannabis for stems and seeds. The stems and the seeds are the energy and the food that are produced by cannabis. The stems go one way to make fuel, and the seeds go somewhere else to make food. And the reason that's important is because unless we disengage from fossil fuels and nuclear energy, then our children and grandchildren will inherit a dysfunctional planet. We know that. That's been said many times in many ways by many different people. But the solution to the climate change that we're in the initial stages of is to recognize that 83 years ago, a critically important agricultural resource was removed from the so-called free market economy. And what that did was it the free market economy into dependence on other resources that filled the void that was left by cannabis hemp agriculture. Cannabis hemp is the best available source of organic vegetable protein on Earth. It also provides the most abundant source of energy feedstocks to the greatest number of people in virtually every soil and climate condition on the planet, with the exception of the radical extremes. But more importantly, cannabis is unique in emitting atmospheric aerosol terpenes at quantities that are significant for repairing the atmosphere that's been damaged by the cutting of the boreal forests and the death of the marine phytoplankton in the oceans that used to produce these aerosol terpenes at twice the volume that they do now, because half the boreal forests have been cut and half the marine phytoplankton have died over the past 60 years for various reasons. Now, identifying cannabis as the only crop that produces the volume of terpenes needed singles it out for phytoremediation of Earth's atmosphere. There are other environmental services that cannabis provides besides the atmospheric aerosol terpene production. Cannabis also sequesters more carbon from the atmosphere than any other agricultural resource, and does so in more soil and climate conditions than any other crop on Earth. It also produces copious amounts of oxygen that the atmosphere requires, that we require in order to breathe on this planet. And recognizing that the boreal forest and the marine phytoplankton used to be the organisms on the planet, the so-called lungs of the Earth, that emitted the oxygen and the terpenes and sequestered the carbon. In the past, cannabis, a strategic resource for producing the necessary elements for the atmosphere that we need in order to achieve sustainability on this planet. So cannabis has experienced a polar shift in values just in the past decade, where 10 years ago, cannabis was recognized as being an illegal crop. And if you grew it, you could go to jail. And many people did go to jail and are still in prison for something that now has been identified in the midst of a global pandemic in some places as an essential crop. And here in Oregon, where I live, producing cannabis for market, and cannabis dispensaries are staying open so that people can access what they need in order to deal with these difficult times that we're facing. Later on, I'll get into talking about whether or not the current pandemic is what it appears to be. There is quite a bit of information online from people who seem to question that, and I believe in critical thinking, so I think it is important to question whether or not what we're being told is accurate or true. But regardless of all of that, it remains that our best strategy for dealing with whatever the situation is politically and in terms of the COVID pandemic, it remains that growing cannabis in 2020 is a solution whose time has come. And the only thing that keeps farmers from investing their land and their time and their labor in cannabis agriculture is that the THC limits on industrial hemp have been set so low that it really is an enormous risk for farmers to plant cannabis, because if their crop tests above the 0.30% THC limit that's been set, then they could lose their entire crop. It could be destroyed. It could be unsaleable. Now, things are changing, and people are trying to adapt to these conditions in various ways, but it's important to understand that the THC limits are crippling an industry that could only hope for reversing climate imbalance. And people really need to decide what they're worried about. If they're worried about THC, which has been shown to be part of our physiological repertoire of things that can help the human body and actually supplies our endogenous cannabinoid system with the cannabinoids it needs in order to maintain balance in our bodies, or do we really need to look at imbalances in our environment and in our society and in our economic structures that indicate that this crop may be mankind's functional interface with the natural order? Because we know that without it, for the last 83 years, we've achieved a level of dysfunction in our environment and in our society and in our economic systems that are threatening all life on Earth. Many people don't realize that one of the greatest threats to our existence is the increasing UVB radiation from the sun. And the reason that the UVB is increasing, aside from the depletion of the ozone layer that allows more UVB radiation to penetrate Earth's atmosphere is also the in the atmosphere that used to be produced, as I said, by the boreal forest and the marine phytoplankton. The terpenes, it has been shown by climate scientists working in Sweden back in 2006, it was reported that the aerosol terpenes produced by the boreal forests and the marine phytoplankton refract solar radiation, the UVB radiation, away from the planet and serve as cloud condensation nuclei that form bright and persistent clouds. Well, with half the aerosol terpenes in the atmosphere, that means we have half of the refractive effect and half of the cloud condensation nuclei that we used to have. Well, what's fascinating about terpenes is that they have antiviral, antifungal, antibiotic, antimicrobial properties. And we assume that those terpenes are effective in those ways in the atmosphere as being part of the hydrologic cycle. Then we can see we have half the antiviral, antifungal, antimicrobial properties and half of the antimicrobial, antifungal, antibiotic properties working in the atmosphere that we had even half a century ago. And there are viruses in the atmosphere. There are biotic pathogens that are growing in the atmosphere. Some of them are resistant to UVB radiation even. And we should be very concerned about the lack of terpenes in the atmosphere and in the hydrologic cycle, because they may very well play a role in purifying the hydrologic cycle and purifying the water and the rain and the snow. So these things are all things that I offer for consideration in my book entitled Cannabis Versus Climate Change. People can find my book on Amazon, and you can also find my film on Vimeo by the same title. It's Cannabis Versus Climate Change: How Hot Does Earth Have to Get Before All Solutions Are Considered? Now, I've had previous radio broadcasts, and I've talked about a lot of these things on other programs, but I bring them up again because as yet, there has not been a proportionate response, I feel, the significance of what I'm introducing. So every Sunday, I have this program, and I introduce this information in hopes that people will hear it and respond to it. Because as I've written in my book, time is the limiting factor in the equation of survival. We don't know how many growing seasons we have left to make a difference. And if we are to affect the climate and the healing of Earth's atmosphere, I think we have to tie our energy production to the healing of Earth's atmosphere. And the only way we can do that, cannabis hemp agriculture. The more hemp we grow, the more terpenes are produced, the more carbon is sequestered, and the better chance we have for rebalancing Earth's atmosphere. At the same time, with that quantity of raw materials to work with, we can produce all of the energy we need. We can produce all of the protein we need to feed the growing population on this planet, and we can expand the arable base on this planet so that we can accommodate more people in the future that we know are coming. We can also eliminate the wars for oil that are killing so many people all over the world. And we can eliminate world hunger by growing cannabis in every soil and climate condition to which it may be able to adapt. We can provide in bolstering our immune systems, and we can recognize the nutritional benefits of hemp seed as being part of that nutraceutical array that cannabis offers uniquely to not only human beings, but also to wildlife and even fish, which love to eat hemp seed and can provide a market for the quantity of seeds that need to be produced, that can be produced. Also, I mean, the CBD and the different CBG and CBN and the other cannabinoids that people are isolating from the cannabis flowers, both the low THC and high THC strains, offer a plethora of active ingredients, including the cannabinoids, but also the other components in the cannabis plant that are being recognized for their therapeutic value. I'll just for example, in hemp seeds, the proteins include edistin and albumin proteins. They include all of the essential fatty acids in proper proportion for long-term consumption, the GLA, omega-6, and the ALA, the omega-3, essential fatty acids. All of the essential amino acids in meaningful quantities for optimum health, phytosterols, lignans, vitamins, including vitamin E, vitamin B1, vitamin B2, the riboflavin, minerals, including phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, calcium, iron, sodium, manganese, zinc, and copper. All of these things are essential components for optimum health, and bolstering our immune systems is becoming more and more important as we are being herded into the vaccine regimens that are being forced upon us now with mandatory vaccines, these forced medical procedures that are being imposed on people out of fear. And there are natural, better ways to address these things than to just get stuck with a needle. That is really something that needs to be looked at objectively and considered in the context of the information that's available, where people who are vaccinated tend to have more chronic diseases and more chronic conditions, apparently, than people who are not vaccinated and develop their immune systems naturally and fully. And it goes back to respect for nature and respect for the wisdom of the evolutionary process that has produced our immune systems, that in the context of the pharmaceutical industry, you would think that we are completely defenseless against these things. But in truth, if it wasn't for our immune systems, then we would not have survived to develop vaccines and develop these various medical procedures that are sometimes effective and sometimes not. I think it's important to consider that, at one time penicillin was very widely used and very effective in preventing infection and in some cases curing infection. And it's stunning nowadays to learn that penicillin is ineffective in 99% of the cases where it used to be effective, because the pathogens have developed resistance to penicillin. So the plant components that cannabis produces are being shown to be effective, defending against things like methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, the MRSA, MRSA, and other Clostridioides, that is a killer. And to limit the production of cannabis when all of these properties are being revealed as potent in treating these serious biotic infections is makes no sense. It makes no sense to limit our production of something that is showing many, many avenues of effectiveness in dealing with serious illnesses of many types, from cancer and epilepsy to neurological disorders and muscle spasticity and hyperemesis and things that are truly life-threatening. Whereas THC is not a life-threatening substance. It is actually a life-enhancing substance in many ways. And to ignore that is to be misled, really, because nowadays we have the information we need to make informed decisions. It's sometimes hard to discern what's true and what's not true, but if you stick with it, you get a general consensus of what's true and what's not. It's more enlightening than just tuning into one wavelength and excluding any other viewpoint. And so this program is all about inclusive viewpoints, and I don't think I can really be expected to be listened to if I don't listen to other people. And so I am about ready to start inviting caller participation. I've got a couple more minutes of rambling here to share with you. I just want to say that I recognize that a lot of people in Oregon are growing seedless flowers, and they've structured their production around seedless buds because that's what the market demanded. You know, that's in these past few years, the CBD green rush has taken off like a rocket as people discover the therapeutic benefits of CBD. But the Sensimilla affliction that we have here in Oregon has virtually impossible to grow seeded bud without eliciting, in some cases, threats, or in some cases, people have had their crops plowed under, apparently, from what I understand. But I think it's important to deal with that and to point out that the CBD market is a boom and bust market. The farmers who have invested themselves in CBD are sometimes successful and sometimes not. And it has been a roller coaster in Oregon for farmers who are trying to find seeds and clones to plant that will produce seedless buds. Whereas the most valuable thing about the cannabis plant is its ability to eliminate our dependence on fossil fuels. And that won't happen if people are limiting themselves in their income streams to just the CBD, the seedless flowers. The stems and the seeds from the plant are equally, if not more valuable than the CBD. And they're not mutually exclusive. You can still harvest CBD from seeded buds. You can still harvest THC from seeded buds. You can still use cannabis as an herbal therapeutic by growing the seeded buds and harvesting all of the different products that are associated with seeded buds. So it's important for
the farmers who are afraid of pollen in the air to recognize a couple of things. First of all, there is no money on a burned out planet. If we don't fix climate change, it won't matter what we do fix. And the market for cannabis will not persist in the context of radical imbalances in our economic system and in our social evolution. So if you are concerned with the living conditions on this planet and can to a change in perception, then you'll last in this industry. And if you don't, then the industry will move on without you, and you will experience hardship. But in order to avoid all of that, the first thing that needs to happen is that the THC limits on industrial hemp need to be lifted, need to be eliminated, because nobody is going to access THC through the industrial hemp. If people want THC, they'll access it through the high THC strains of marijuana that are being grown. And so all of the regulation of THC in the hemp industry is a complete waste of time and money and effort at the same time that it cripples the industry. So I would like people to consider that we can make more money. We can take a $1 billion industry that is the seedless marijuana industry, and we can turn it into a $1 trillion industry by growing seeded buds, harvesting for seed, for herbal therapeutics, including the CBD, and especially turning the stems into energy, namely cellulosic hydrogen is, to my knowledge, the most efficient way to convert solar energy, sunlight, to usable electrical energy and hydrogen fuel cells. So those are the industries that require infrastructural investment. But that infrastructural investment will not come as long as the THC limits threaten the industrial hemp crops. And it's just a very easy set of relationships to see and to recognize that people who are able to grow the seedless cannabis and the market for seedless cannabis will increase the price of people who are able to grow cannabis without seeds in it. Now, it's going to take infrastructural investment to provide seeded bud. You're going to have to build greenhouses. A lot of people are already building greenhouses. But the price on the seedless bud will go up if there's less of it. Right now, there's a glut of seedless bud because there's no pollen in the air. And so everybody can pretty much grow seedless bud, and the market is flooded with it. There's also a market for seeded bud that has not been developed because there is so little seeded bud available. But all of these things have to be allowed to follow their natural course. If we disrespect nature and we try to tweak the genetics, we're essentially opening the door for the GMO modification of the hemp industry, which will cut everybody out except the mega corporations and the Monsanto sized corporations that can take out patents on their exclusive seed strains that will contaminate other farmers' crops and wind up in having Monsanto suing people for the I can't bring up the name right now, but it is the violation of the copyright on or the patents on seed strains. And, you know, Monsanto has already sued corn farmers and wheat farmers whose crops have been contaminated by Monsanto genetics. And Monsanto takes these farmers to court and brings lawsuits against them and wins. So if the hemp farmers in Oregon think that's not going to happen to them, then they better think again, because that's what is coming. If we disrespect nature, if we fail to recognize the sacred nature of what we're doing and the sacred practice of organic agriculture with respect for the 35 million year old history of this plant and the evolution to where it is now and the continued evolution of this plant that we can participate in intentionally, then we'll wind up cutting ourselves out of an industry that really should not be controlled by the corporate interests. It needs to be brought to a regional level where we can avoid dependence on international relationships to provide our energy and our food. We need to regionalize our economic structures around an abundant harvest that is possible here in Oregon, certainly, and in other places, and to recognize that we need to produce seed in order to expand the arable base in other parts of the world so everybody can have what they need. This is about redistribution of essential resources. Cannabis has been recognized in 7 presidential executive orders as an essential strategic resource during times of emergency preparedness. And the federal protocol that is available for farmers in the United States and in other parts of the world, if they choose to embrace it, is referred to as essential civilian demand in several federal documents pertaining to emergency preparedness and national security. CFR 44, Code of Federal Regulations 44, refers to essential civilian demand. 7 presidential executive orders signed by 7 different American presidents that pertain to emergency preparedness include executive orders signed by Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Bill Clinton, and Barack Obama. So if you look up the emergency preparedness executive orders signed by those presidents, you'll find hemp mentioned as a strategic food resource. But it's also strategic for several other reasons. And we have I've discussed some of those reasons already, the fuel component of cannabis and the stems, the cellulosic hydrogen that we can make from the stems, same stems that produce the food, the seed, and also the leaves and the flowers, which have nutritional benefit and essential healing potential in them. The green drink that I have been making since 1997, I refer to as leche verde. And it consists of the seeds and the flowers and the roots and leaves of the plant blended in spring water and strained. And it comes out looking like green milk. And so I call it leche verde because that's what it looks like. And it is delicious and very healthful. I have friends who have been drinking it now for months who are reporting exceptional health and I suggest that people open their minds to more and more uses of this plant that will reveal themselves as the stigma of reefer madness is overcome, and we stop looking for things wrong with this plant and listening to people who don't know anything about the plant telling us what to think about it, and we start looking at history and the ways in which this incredible agricultural resource has been used throughout millennia. And it's just in the past 100 years or so that people started recognizing that it was a threat economically, and so they started passing laws to limit its availability so that they could sell us other things that are gaiacidal, earth-killing practices, the fossil fuels most prominently, but also the logging of trees for paper. We don't need to cut trees for paper. We don't need to overfish the oceans for protein. We don't need to do a lot of the things that we do because cannabis is not available. If cannabis was available to everyone in the world who needs fuel and food and fiber and herbal therapeutics, then we wouldn't be in the situation we're in now. We wouldn't have cut down all of the boreal forests, and we wouldn't have killed half of the marine phytoplankton and overfished the oceans to the point of ecosystem collapse, which is what's happening right now in the oceans, is the collapse of the marine ecosystem. And it's just, it's time for us to do something different. And while nobody else seems to know how to fly this planet, I think I do. And if I'm wrong, there's no harm done. There's only, maybe we solve world hunger and we overcome the limitations that are resulting in overpopulation and we end the wars for oil. Oh, darn. I mean, if that's all we do, then at least we've done those things. But I'm fairly certain that if we grow enough cannabis, we can replenish the atmosphere in time to avoid the systemic collapse that we're in the initial stages of. At this point, I'd like to invite people to call in if you're listening. The number is 516-387-1507. Again, that's 516-387-1507 to participate in the show today and to be archived along with the other shows that I've produced in the past few weeks and last couple of years that I've been taking advantage of Blog Talk Radio. I would like to thank the people at Blog Talk Radio for making this service available and to encourage others to start your own on-air blog talk radio program and participate in the global dialogue. Once again, that number is 516-387-1507. And I look forward to answering the phones if callers are waiting to let me finish and call and participate, then this would be a good time to do it. Otherwise, I'll continue on with what I've been thinking about and trying to enlist support from people who may be in a position to help spread this message. My blog is the California Cannabis Ministry blog. You can Google California Cannabis Ministry and hemp, and it will take you to my website where you can find my writing. You can also Google United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, Food Security and Nutrition Forum with my name, and that will take you to the writing that I have posted at the UNFAO's Food Security and Nutrition Forum, where I introduced the nutritional value of hemp seed to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization years ago. And it is just stunning to me that it took somebody like me, who's just a regular guy with a background in life sciences and population dynamics and things like that, a journalist, investigative journalist. I've been published different places in the world, my photographs, my writing. But I really just consider myself a cannabis scholar and photographer and gardener. And the other titles that I've had in different times in my life include marine naturalist. I was the director for Sea Shepherd in Hawaii for several years. And I have also grown and bred cannabis in different places at different times, and have a quite a deep background in nature. I have been a commercial diver and lived in the woods for years on end, and so I have a real deep insight into the natural world. I see that I have a caller on the line from the 808 area code. I will go ahead and answer that call right now and see who we have on the line from Hawaii, I think.
Hey, good afternoon, Paul. This is Ranger Rick from the Big Island of Hawaii.
All right, Rick. Happy to hear your voice. Tell me what's on your mind.
Hey, Ben, listening to the program today, I think you're hitting some nails on the head here, and I hope that a lot of folks out there listening or are reviewing this recording later on will take a look at this a little more closely. I think, I guess where I'm headed at is where you had brought up the dangers of genetic modification and genetic engineering of the cannabis plant. You know, it's very interesting when the U.S. Stepped into technically legalizing industrial hemp, but setting an ultra low THC level, one that cannot be obtained in many states. And it does appear that what we have on the horizon is something that started back in 2013 in Uruguay. You're probably familiar with that, Paul, and you might be able to tell your listeners a little more detail about it. But Uruguay basically decided to legalize recreationally at a federal level, first country to do so. But they worked directly with Monsanto to get a genetically modified cannabis so that they could have genetic tracers and control their country's black market. It was interesting to me that the U.S. started the industrial hemp program in 2014, also setting very low THC levels, which was going to lead itself to genetic modification. It appears, you know, what we have on our hands right now is Monsanto either coming through the front door or back door. And if we don't get our cannabis growers out there producing seed in mass quantities right now, we may lose the plant like has been lost with the corn and soy plants, but other plants as well. And so I'd like you to be able to expand a little bit on that topic.
Well, you know, I think you've introduced it very, very capably, and really, all I can add to that is that, you know, this is the most valuable agricultural resource on the planet. It would be naive to think that people wouldn't try to control this industry, that they would just let, you know, mom and pop gardeners and farmers just proceed naturally with this plant. That's absolutely not the case. And you know, the reason that the super low THC limits have been imposed is in order to exclude people who don't have the ability to control the genetics. There is such a thing as genetic drift, so that even if you have a strain of seed that produces less than 0.3% THC, eventually those seeds are going to genetically shift to a higher THC concentration because the plant produces THC for its own reasons, regardless of what people want to do with the molecule. Cannabis uses THC in a variety of ways that help it to grow and to protect itself against pest infestation and such things as molds and things like that. So, I mean, it's really true what you're saying is that, you know, introducing a low THC limit, as has been done, is just a mechanism for controlling the industry. And the antidote to that is for people to be growing as much seed as possible in as many soil and climate conditions as it may be able to adapt, and to trust nature to do what needs to be done in order to help this plant grow. And I think that if we are honest about the regressive influences in our society that are dominating our social evolution, then we can see that this is a priority to overcome the great lie of 1937 that uses THC as a boogeyman and that keeps people from recognizing the true value of this. I think that if people look into the so-called dangers of THC that are being used to limit the industrial hemp industry, they'll see that the THC is not a genuine threat. What is a genuine threat is the UVB that is increasing. And one of the things that UVB does is it causes genetic mutation. And because the UVB is increasing and the potential for genetic mutation is increasing with it, the whole foundation of our ecosystem and our agricultural systems could shift without any warning. And the danger of that is so extreme that THC is of minor concern in lieu of or in face of potential genetic modification of heirloom strains, for example. Right now, people take a lot for granted with heirloom seeds. Oh, well, you can just get some heirloom seeds and put them in the ground, and they'll produce whatever they produced last year. They will faithfully replicate themselves, and that's the advantage of having heirloom strains. Well, under conditions of increasing UVB radiation, there are no guarantees for heirloom seeds. And at the same time, the increasing UVB radiation does a lot of other things that we don't want to happen, like the increased solubility of mercury and arsenic out of aqueous solution and the abnormal cell growth that results in cancers and cataracts and things like that. The immune suppression that results in the greater likelihood of global pandemics because our immune systems aren't as strong as they used to be under conditions of radiation or UVB radiation that existed 50 years ago.
And so, I mean, there are a lot of things that people need to take into consideration when looking at the THC limits that have been imposed. But you're right, Rick. I mean, this is a major present threat to our national security and our global integrity.
So I know you're going to have to wind the program down, but I just want to mention really quickly, you know, we all have to remember maybe the first name that came into the picture with Monsanto, Percy Schmeiser, the Canadian farmer, canola farmer, who had developed over 50 years an organic canola that basically surpassed all. He was the first one that Monsanto took down up in Canada. The crops were lost. He's still trying to recover today from the destruction that has been done. It's Monsanto is after it. It's now Bayer. And again, we're just going to have to try to get, you know, the folks out there growing more and more seed and realizing that the seed is not just, you know, for plant production, but it's also for consumption. You know, very, very high in protein, high balanced amino acids and omega-3 and omega-6. So I think we need to grow for it.
Right, you are, Rick. Thank you so much for calling in. I am going to just take the few remaining minutes that I have here to invite people to share this broadcast with people who might be interested in hearing more about these subjects and perhaps getting in touch with me if you like. There's potential for collaboration in Oregon to make this happen. And if people would like to support this message, they can find their way to my California Cannabis Ministry blog. There's a PayPal button there. They can donate. Whatever you can would be appreciated. It takes me about $40 a month to keep this Blog Talk Radio program going. So if you'd like to help with that, please feel invited to blog, and you can donate there. If you'd like to reach me by email, my email is projectpeace@yahoo.com. And I am also on Twitter @projectpeace. Project Peace was started in 1991, almost 30 years ago, when I learned about the true value of the cannabis plant and all of the things that can be made from it. Project Peace is an acronym for Planet Ecology Advancing Conscious Economics. And our conscious economic evolution is an ongoing process that is dependent upon our recognizing the things that we have to work with and being as efficient with them as we can. So cannabis is the tree of life. It is the only crop that can do everything that needs to be done in the time that we may have left to make a difference. So I trust that people will hear this message and respond to it in a positive way. I thank you again for listening today and wish you all a meaningful Easter Sunday. And once again, I just want to say thanks to John Prine for all the healing and the comfort and the wisdom in your work, and just for being the person that you were. You touched us all and will continue to do so into the future. Until next time, next Sunday, high noon, Pacific Standard Time, I bid you a fond farewell and wish you all the best of health. Bye-bye.